It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Miss Judy Gold.
Welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. Now, Lauren, this is a very extra special Kill Me Now because Lauren is not here. Lauren is in Hawaii, so no one will be interrupting me because my oldest, bestest friend, Howard, is here, and he is going to show Lauren how it's done, aren't you, Howard?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Howard and I went to college together. He was my preceptor, also known as RA, and he is the one who made me do stand-up comedy for the first time. And the reason I wanted him here is because our guest today has, I mean, I've known him, how long, 30?
30 years, maybe?
30 years.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, I have loved him from day one, but he gave me one of my most signature pieces of my entire comedy act of my life that people still stop me on the street and say. And if you want to know what that is.
I do.
It's Judy's show! Yeah!
And there's blood running out of my nose.
Right, you got to move the mic up.
I'm close.
It's a podcast.
I've never seen you so comfortable with that thing shaped that way, close to your mouth.
No, please, you know I love it.
That is an audio dick joke.
I fucking love it.
Who am I? You want to introduce me?
You don't fucking tell me how to do the podcast, okay?
Sorry, it's a showrunner.
And I'm having a very Kill Me Now day,
okay?
So we're going to discuss that as well.
All right.
Michael Patrick King, who originally, you were an actor, then you did stand-up with, was King and
Lisa Mende.
We
had a comedy team.
You had a comedy team.
Sort of fast comedy club improv.
Right. You did improv at Manhattan Punchline. And then the two of you went out on your own and did stand-up.
And then we played Vegas, and we broke up after our gig in Vegas.
Right.
The only thing that was bigger than our names on the marquee was Gourmet Buffet 995.
Right.
And then I did stand-up and came back to the improv.
Right.
And that's when...
And then you got a job. I'll just name some of the shows you've worked on. Mm-hmm. Murphy Brown, Will and Grace, Good Advice, Sybil, The Comeback... I don't know this show. Sex in the hell is that?
It's Sex in the City.
City?
Mm-hmm.
Sex in the City. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. It was on for 6 years. And then there were two
was
movies.
It on? Uh-huh. Oh, there were movies too?
There were two.
Oh, wow. I wasn't in that. So then Two Broke Girls is another one. I haven't heard of Two Broke Girls.
Yes, you were because you were on
it. Oh, right. I was on that. I got on that one.
You were hilarious.
Thank you because I got to play a rabbi. Yeah. Today, let me just say, you know, there is no climate change. It's fucking 90 degrees in New York City today.
Is it?
No.
Or just inside you, it's 90 degrees. Cause
no, it's 98. It's got to be over 100. I'm so pissed off.
No, it is hot.
What? It's hot.
It is hot, yeah.
Okay, so who else is hot?
You are.
Both of us.
You
right
know why I
you.
Love both of you?
Right
red
you.
Hair. Uh-huh. Red hair. Uh-huh. One's a Jew and one's Irish.
Uh-huh.
Patrick's on the boards, by the way. Say hi, Patrick.
Hi.
Okay. That's why we won't be hearing from Patrick for the rest of the show. So, you know, Kill Me Now, we talk a lot about the stuff that annoys me, but I really want to talk to you guys first. But I had, you know, Ben is 6'4 now. He's 14. I had an extra long bed delivered. And
wow, he's 6'4", so it's in the genes.
Where the fuck else would it be?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people that are tall that don't have tall
kids.
Oh, no.
6'4", 14.
And what about the other one?
15th shoe. Henry is 6'2".
Wow.
But he came out of Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
But her brother's really tall.
We both said him at the same time.
I know.
It's like we know where to go.
Yes.
Backup right. singers.
Right.
Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon is a mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, we didn't say it in the mm-hmm. gay way. We said it in the mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This is the gay way. Uh-huh.
All right. So Ben decides he's not going to school today. I wake him up at 7. I wake him up at 7:09. I wake him up at 7:17. Please, please. And Henry's like, yeah, he does not, like, he just doesn't go to school today because there's no, it's all movies all day.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't fucking care.
Wait, there's no school?
What do you mean it's all movies
all
day?
He's like, all we're doing is watching movies.
Oh, because it's a fake day?
Because it, most people are, yeah, no one is, right. All the private schools are closed.
Right, that's what he told you, it was a movie
right,
day.
I'm,
and you believed it. Because
I have no control.
I told my mother in fourth grade that we were reading the same chapter every week and that I was caught up. And then at the end of the year, I was 100
Okay, look
behind.
At you now. Look at you
correct.
Now. So shut the fuck
so
up.
So let Ben sleep in.
And
Ben
Henry,
has a very good career ahead of him.
Yeah, and so Henry just sleeps. Like, that's all he fucking does. He had a doctor's appointment at 10:45. I woke him up four times. He's like, no, you didn't. I said, you know what? If you're not going to go to your fucking doctor's appointment, you can call them yourself. So he calls them and changes his doctor's appointment to January 5th. I'm not fucking doing anything for them anymore.
You seem to be actualizing them.
When did he come home from school?
Who?
Henry.
I don't know. Friday? Anyway, Michael Patrick King.
Yes.
So Michael Patrick King is from Scranton, New York.
PA.
I mean, PA.
Close.
What the fuck? I'm losing my fucking mind. You're from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
What is
less
Scranton?
Less glamorous than Scranton, New York would be,
right.
I think.
Scranton, New York's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
Scranton,
that's where,
PA.
Yeah, so now, and you're from an Irish Catholic.
Correct.
What number child are you?
I am the second of four.
Right.
I have three sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the only boy, which sort of destroys the caste system, because when you're the only one of things, then maybe you're the favorite, maybe you're not. You know what I mean? You're the only boy.
Right. But you're sort of a girl now.
That's not true.
I know. So,
Zip. Funk.
Okay. So, now did, and strict Catholic upbringing.
Yeah, very Irish Catholic. You know, my mother ran a Krispy Kreme.
No way.
And my father was a janitor and delivered beer.
No fucking way. Krispy Kreme?
Krispy Kreme. She was a manager, and every one of my sisters worked at that Krispy Kreme.
Now,
she went from the This is the Irish Catholic growth success. She started at the counter, wound up at the office and the counter.
Wow.
So that
oh
is the most
my
you can
God.
Achieve if you're lower middle class Irish.
Wow. So did you get free Krispy Kreme?
Constantly. When I was a Cub Scout, you know how they do like drives and raffles
right.
and stuff? We would do a donut drive. And I remember this day, every day the Cub Scouts would come to our house and our entire dining room was filled with boxes of donuts. Just stacked high, and people would come and get their 40 boxes that they'd sold.
No
like Girl
way.
Scout cookies, only Krispy Kreme donuts.
Were they warm?
Sometimes. There's nothing better than a warm glaze.
Yes.
With a glass of cold milk.
Yeah.
I would know my mother was home when I came home from school, and I would see
you could smell.
Smell and little powdered sugar footprints.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I would have been a fat fuck. Were you fat?
We ate donuts for breakfast, and we would fall asleep at, like, the first period.
That's great. So you're all scholars.
Actually, yes.
Okay. So... were you fat? I need to know.
Never fat.
What
tiny,
about your sisters?
Though. Well, first of all, my thing is, you talk about tall. I was 4'11" when I graduated from high school.
No way.
Wow. Yeah, I grew.
You were?
I grew 12 inches my first year of college.
No
oh
way.
My gosh.
Yes.
Didn't that hurt?
It did. It was clumsy. I would
right.
break things. I'd walk by cabinets. Dishes would fly out and smash on the ground.
Oh, I still do that.
Yeah.
And everyone fucking is like, oh, you're such a klutz. It's like, you don't realize how, like, you say, oh, I'm going to get that. But you don't realize that your arm is so much longer than you think it is.
Well, I never realized that. And,
right.
And, yeah, I was. My whole identity was I'm the...
You were the little short Irish Elfie kid.
I looked exactly like somebody that Strawberry Shortcake, the cartoon character, would go to the prom with.
Right.
When I had my little tux, it looked
right.
like something from a wedding cake for the junior prom.
But did you go to the prom?
Yeah, I went to every prom.
Okay. I didn't go. Did you go to the prom, Howard?
No, I didn't, actually. Isn't that shocking?
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you would go to the prom.
No, you know what? I didn't, because when I was the girl who I was dating when I was a senior, she didn't want to go to the prom, although we still have, you know, discussions about that even to this day.
Who was it?
It was Elise.
Oh, That is ridiculous.
Well,
what'd you do on prom night?
I actually went out with a friend of mine, and we went to a bar. And that was it.
I was in a tent.
It wasn't that big of a deal.
Me and my three friends in high school were in a tent. We slept in a tent in one of their backyards and smoked pot. Okay, so
I invited a girl to the prom.
Yeah.
And I was so excited.
Right.
Right? And the whole thing was located around the bouquet for me.
Uh-huh.
Like, what bouquet are we going to get her?
And you didn't know that you were gay then.
I knew everything then. But okay. Whether I said it or not, right, is a whole other thing. But anyway, she comes down the stairs in a pantsuit.
Oh, my God. Mm. Is she a lesbo?
Probably.
Hello?
Why else would she have said yes to go with me?
Yeah, that's true.
But anyway,
was she taller than you?
Taller, and in the picture, I'm standing on my toes.
No way.
Yeah,
I gotta see that picture.
And holding flowers that I wanted to hold.
Oh, Michael.
It's fine. I'll work
okay.
out.
And were you involved in theater in high school?
You couldn't be involved in theater in high school. There was no such a thing.
Really?
I went to a Catholic high school. And I do remember in English really wanting to raise my hand when we read Midsummer Night's Dream.
Right. Mm.
Because I really knew I was born to play Puck.
Right.
But I knew if I raised my hand, I would never hear the end of it.
Right.
So instead, I didn't.
Did you get teased for being short?
Yes, but mostly for being a sissy.
Really? Because you don't seem sissy-ish.
Well, thank you. I used to act.
Whatever. It's fun. So when did you know? When did you know?
Always.
I mean, I always knew, too.
Always.
Howard hasn't figured it out yet. He's married with three kids. Trying to get him to come out of the closet.
No.
Not
you know
happening.
What? It's everyone's journey, Judy.
I know. Anyway.
I'm sure the kids will love hearing this.
Yes.
Yeah. So everyone says it to him. I mean, he loves show tunes.
They do not.
Yes, they
Why?
Do.
Just because I like show tunes?
Yes.
So what?
Everyone knows that if you like show tunes.
Yes, it's all about the show tunes. All right.
So, and your
Lloyd
sisters.
Weber straight.
What?
Andrew Lloyd Webber straight.
You know what, Michael? I wanted you on the show.
And
I thought you'd
now?
Be a team player with
against
me.
Howard? No. Can't.
Okay, so.
I can't. Whatever's happening.
All right, go
here
fuck yourself.
Yes.
All right,
okay.
So you go to college.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you study.
Theater.
And
I did plays in high school.
Right.
Outside of high school, though.
Right. How about your siblings? Any
no,
interest
no,
in the theater?
There's no theatricality in my family at all. I literally am an alien. There was no... I would put plays on in my backyard.
Okay.
And that's the true genesis of me. I was like, I would never be in them, but
right.
I would make my three sisters and the neighborhood kids put on plays on the picnic table.
And you would direct and produce.
I would write and direct and produce and tell people where to go.
You love doing that.
I do. It's
I
my
know.
Natural
That's
thing
so fun.
To put on a show. And then I got sidetracked. He's on my side. You see how it's happening?
Yeah, this. I don't like this little team.
All right,
I don't fucking
break
like
up.
It.
Break
Patrick, come on.
Look,
whose show is this?
Look, Michael and I got Michael and I got here earlier before you, so he and I had some time together.
Shut the fuck up. Okay, so you're putting on these shows and bossing everyone around like you always have.
Yeah. I don't think I'm. Yeah. I used to watch Judy on stage, and I would sit in the back of the comedy club. When I was a stand-up, it was like, I was okay. I could make people laugh, sort of. I was good. I was entertaining.
Right.
Codependent with the audience. But I would sit in the back, and my real skill was I would look at people when they were going to do Letterman or something, and I would say, don't do that, don't do that.
Right.
And I would say to Judy, I would write for Judy in the back of the house. I would sit and go, Judy, you should say this. Because she was so clearly perfect already, but you could write for her.
Mm. Oh, Michael.
It's true. So you nice. Were clear.
But it was so funny because at the improv, do you remember the improv on 44th?
Yeah, sure.
And there was this side door, and I'd be on stage, and all of a sudden you'd hear knock, 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 and it would be Michael outside.
Because when I was a stand-up, I didn't have they quit a tight 20 minutes.
Right.
So I had to be the doorman.
Right.
So I was outside picking up the grate.
Right.
Where urination covered grate.
Right.
Change the beer tap. You can't get far from Krispy
Kreme. And then he would fucking knock on the door. And I'd be like, what's up? Fire! It was so fun. And then you'd get on the back mic and just talk to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so much fun.
It was really fun.
And no one had cameras or phones and was recording you and it was such a community.
Yeah, like it was, I always think of the club as a high school.
Right.
And like our class was Ray Romano,
right.
me, you,
John Stewart.
John Stewart, David Tell was like a eighth grader. We were the freshmen. And the seniors were like Carol Leifer, and Jerry Seinfeld.
That's true.
And we were all, you get very close to people when you're going on at 3 a.m.
Right.
And it was so much fun.
And just hang out and talk. So happy to get on stage.
Yeah. And also to not get on stage and talk about that for an hour.
Right.
Why doesn't he like me?
Right.
I should be on.
Why
I'm
the
not
fuck
a song
is he
act.
Getting spots?
What?
He has props.
I could do song parodies too if I would close.
Right.
Mm.
Wow.
I was with you your first time you went to the improv. Do you remember when you went on open mic night?
Was that Catch a Rising Star or the improv?
No, it was the improv.
Really?
Yes.
How'd you do right up front?
I think.
Did you pass right
away? Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I always passed.
That's rare.
I passed there. I passed Catch and I passed the comic strip. I passed all of them.
It was a big deal to pass.
I know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really
interesting. I passed at Catch. And I was, I mean, I'd never get, I mean, I'd stay there all night. Joy would go on, and I'd hang out with Eve, her daughter, because she was closer to my age. Mm-hmm. But I would wait, I didn't care, as long because the band laughed. Mm-hmm. You know, there'd be three people in the audience, but the band would watch me and laugh, because usually they'd leave, and that's how I knew I was funny.
The first, I was the late night MC, and the job for the late night MC was to keep the audience there just as long as you could to get as many people waiting at the bar on. If they could get their foot on the stage, they would get paid.
Right.
So one night I was handing it over to Ray Romano.
Right.
And it was like one of his early sets, and he was going to bring up our friend Nancy Shane.
Right.
Who's a very eclectic act.
Right.
So he gets up on stage, and some guys are talking, and he goes, this next lady, shut up or she won't blow you.
What did she do?
She got up on stage and did a piano parody and bombed.
And then everyone left.
And then everyone left.
Yeah. Oh, God, I remember. I remember when they'd hand it over to the late night MC. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So what? Why did you end up doing stand? Like, first of all, it's you and Lisa Mendez.
Yeah.
And everyone thought you were dating, right?
No one thought we were dating.
But you were so in the closet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you or did you not have a huge crush on Marty Rackham?
That's an interesting question.
Yes, thank you.
I would say no, because I have very strong boundaries. I have very strong boundaries. And I made giant walls between me and any straight person. Truly.
Really? Because Marty Rackham, what does he do now?
He's a soccer coach. He lives in L.A.
He is?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
What did he do back then?
So he was a stand-up.
Yeah.
Stand-up actor.
Yeah, an actor. Very handsome. Very likable. And
he was a buddy. I liked it. It was like a friend of mine.
Right. But we all knew Michael was gay, and we're like, when is he going to come out? When is he going to... Didn't you have a girlfriend a little bit?
Not an official girlfriend.
Whatever. He had fake girlfriends. And so... But
As you do.
Right. I didn't have any fake... Did I have fake boyfriends?
No, you never did.
No, because you're not a good actor.
Yeah. Oh, my God!
No,
that is so mean!
No.
I wasn't trying to...
I'm supposed to sit here and say that I had fake girlfriends?
Yeah.
All right.
And you just said you did.
But here's the thing. I want to be very clear.
But I always thought you had a crush on Marty Rackham.
Okay, that's your particular drama.
Okay.
I didn't really think about that.
Okay.
But it's a very, very
specific...
Were
you sexually active during the...
Yes.
And did you feel guilt? Did you feel shame?
Enormous guilt, enormous shame, enormous struggle, enormous empowerment to come out. No joke. Quest of the life.
So when do you think you officially came out like that? Because I know coming out, it is like... 400 pounds, you're lighter. You're a lighter human being. You're
Look, I don't know how heavy you want to get on this, but you know, you talked about you had girlfriends, and then there was a woman that I was very close to, and I knew she was in love with me, and I knew that I couldn't go any further down this road.
Right. Mm.
And
For
her sake, and I had basically walked the line, never abused her or anything like that, just never committed, and finally I knew that she was the person I had to free.
Right.
So I freed myself and her. Mm. And it was a very big deal. And but it was late. It was like 37.
I know. But it was, did you feel like you were having an out-of-body experience?
I actually fell on the floor.
You
when
did
I
not.
I said the words, I fell on the floor, crying.
Wow.
Yeah. No joke.
See, the Catholic thing is hard.
Yeah, very hard.
Yeah, the Jew thing is fine because everyone's mental already. So it's like, it could be a number of things
there's always the first wave of societal that you get from the time you're born.
Right.
You start getting, you better change who you are.
And right.
I think like when you're
Howard,
five.
You can't say yeah.
No, I'm listening. I'm being very sympathetic. I am.
When you're five, you're really yourself.
Right.
Whatever that means.
Right.
Then you start to get the signals.
Right.
So you build what I think is like a scaffold around yourself and you create a false self that you convince yourself is
or that you can use when you're outside.
Yeah, and also,
this is who I'm going to be.
Yeah, and then you think people don't know, and then you tell me people do know, and it depends.
Well, I think I always no, I thought so. Oh, yeah, yeah, you mean
outside,
right,
objective, like we all knew. Yeah, so some people are like, oh, it's no big deal. Other people are like, really?
So did Lisa, so you're with Lisa Mende.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did she have any idea?
Because I really never talked about it with her.
Okay.
I'm sure she did.
Okay.
She was married to Dom Irrera.
Right.
I was like their child.
Right.
Mm. We were playing the comedy circuit.
Right.
It was, you know, I used to go a lot of long walks. Here's the key. If anyone's going for a lot of long walks,
right,
they're either on fire inside trying to figure shit out.
Right.
Can you say shit?
You can say fuck, cunt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or they're going to get blowjobs.
Right.
It's one or two things.
Right.
But if your kid's out taking a long, long, long walk, long walks.
Right.
They're working stuff through.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you do stand... How did you and Lisa... So, you're doing stand-up, and you're making a living.
We made a living, and that's...
Yeah.
The comedy was the first time I was able to make a living, because I came to New York to be an actor. I was okay. Then I started writing plays, and as soon as I started writing plays, I started getting a little bit more traction, and the comedy was the first time I really got money.
Right.
You know, because you could... That's what I was saying about the improv. I was thinking, actually, I didn't say it was, how great it was. You could really... Mm-hmm. Show up, and on your merit and your balls,
right,
you could actually make money.
Right.
Whereas I knew thousands of actors
that couldn't make money.
Couldn't make money and couldn't actualize any sort of recognition because they needed a troupe.
Right. Okay. And you and Lisa, what can you explain the act? It was kind of
it was like... we did improv. We would say, give us, we're going to stop, you fill in the word, and then we would make the audience laugh.
Right.
And we would do sometimes very elevated stuff like theater styles or television styles, but mostly it was freeze.
Right.
Well, look at you, the big-breasted lady. And we would scream, and we did Baltimore and New York and Boston and wherever.
Right.
But we were funny and facile.
Okay. And then what drove you to break up?
We were done.
You just said, this is it, we're done.
It was also interesting because we were in a completely different economic situation.
Right.
She was married and had an income with her husband.
Right.
And I had no money.
Right.
And after a while, when you're... Basically, it was a relationship, but the sex was on stage.
Right.
We just ran through it. We were really connected.
Right.
And then it was really sick of each other. As a matter of fact, we did an off-Broadway show, off-Broadway show called Them. And we were in the middle of rehearsing it.
Right.
And we had pushed ourselves so hard. And at one point, she said to me, I hate you. And as she said, I hate you, she threw up.
Oh my
no
God!
Way.
I hate you. It was in there so long
and
so violent, and I was like, "Wow, that's the truth."
Did you? She get puke on you?
Just on the floor.
Uh huh.
I hate you.
Like, okay. Are you fucking kidding me?
No, it was the most like the fact that she said it finally made her physically ill. Mm. She probably had a reason, but we were really connected, and then it was
so
just
was
too
that
much.
The end of your relationship? She pukes.
No.
Who cleans up the puke?
Me. And her.
Wait,
the Irish
clean up the puke.
The Jew walked away, and the Irish guy cleaned
all
up
right,
the puke.
All right, so the Irish guy picks up the puke.
It wasn't that much. It was just enough.
Right, and then do you
the
hug? Do you say, I hate you
no,
too?
No, it was separation, separate corners, come back tomorrow in the spirit of the theater to rehearse.
And how was
great.
The next day?
To wear a raincoat.
Did she?
The fever broke.
Did
came
she?
Back the next day, like a Gallagher concert. I had a complete splash guard all around me.
Wow.
But then we wound up going to Vegas, and I remember we were on stage, and I thought to myself, she really doesn't want to be here, and I think it's fun still.
Oh, that's sad.
And then she didn't become a stand-up, and I did. I went on to become a stand-up.
Right.
But we ended really well. I was so blessed. It was so much fun. We did, get ready, Merv Griffin.
What? Oh,
we did Merv Griffin.
I love Merv!
We did the Merv Griffin show, his last, like, six shows.
Oh, my God.
Ooh.
You got ass back?
Yes.
Wow. What year was this?
I don't remember. Whatever Merv Griffin stopped. We were out in L.A. trying to make it at the Improv in L.A., which was a whole other scene.
Right.
Speaking of throwing up, I would walk around the block sick to my stomach before I went in that club.
Because, really?
You know, like, oh, Robin Williams, and like, maybe you're going to get on and you're hanging out at the bar. Mm-hmm. Oof. Meant
you know,
too much.
I had such a different attitude because all I wanted to do was be a better comic and just... Do stand up.
That's, you know, yeah, you were fierce.
Yeah. And I say this with absolute honesty. The difference is you weren't hiding and I was. So me walking in a room.
Right. Oh, right, right, right.
And me, actually, one time we were playing a comedy club in Connecticut and I was still in the closet.
Treehouse?
Billy Jack's Cafe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go. Billy Jack's Cafe of Comedy. He
hey, Michael, what time are you going to be at Billy Jack's?
Billy Jack's Cafe of Comedy. Lisa, and it was the stage was completely covered in gold shag rug that went up the wall, and there were conquistador shields. And we used to do this thing where I'm Michael King, I'm Lisa Mendy. We're going to come for improvisation. We're going to ask you for suggestions. And we used to wear black and white, and I had a black and white tie with stripes. And there's right at my feet, there's like four redneck guys, and I'm in the middle of saying my thing. I'm Michael King, this is Lisa Mindy, and I hear one guy say, look at this fucking jerk off ass faggot asshole.
No
and
way.
I was like,
whoa.
I felt like Alice in Wonderland. I just fell through the floor and I just kept talking. I was like, bah, yeah, bah, 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 bah. So I was hiding, so I was terrified of going on stage, and you were not, because you were not hiding.
Well, I also had been humiliated every day of my life in high school. So none of that. I was like, been there, heard that,
well,
go fuck yourself.
Howard was telling me before you came here today when we were talking that you were in college a natural. And we both agree that you're a complete natural.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You are. You were so, so screamingly funny back then, even before you were doing stand-up.
Thank you, Howard. Thank you, Michael.
It's true.
You
are clearly...
Right.
And like when we brought you out for Two Broke Girls, it's just, I'm going to bring Judy out and I can just tap that.
Who laughs the loudest?
Howard still laughs at, yeah, I'm not kidding. It's really.
That's great.
I know.
How often do you two see
each other?
We talk a lot.
We talk a lot, yeah, but not often
enough.
How
did you maintain a relationship this many years?
Oh my God. I don't know because...
You know what? We've always stayed in touch. Well, first of all, when I lived in L.A., you used to come out and you'd stayed with me.
Yeah. I don't know. We bonded that first day of college. Yeah. And
that's
my
amazing.
Siblings were never nice to me.
I love Judy.
And we... I don't know. And his whole family. He knew my parents.
Yes.
My siblings. I mean...
You know what? You and I always
would
had...
Would you be married
in
a different world?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The first time, when I was a freshman in college at the theater department, I went to a party at the head of the theater department's house. We were all like, it was like September.
Right.
We go in, and he lived in a cottage on Lake Erie.
Right.
So that's already, I see one bedroom with a bed in it, and then another room where he lived with the technical director. But the technical director's bed had a patchwork quilt and collectible dolls.
Oh,
and that's the first time I ever went, they're together at 17.
You know, my neighbor across the hall, Marjorie, we can see in each other's apartment, but she figured it out because she had just met us, and there apparently was laundry on the daybed for like a week. And she was like, oh, Sharon's been home and there's laundry on the bed. I mean, like it took her. They don't seem to take the laundry off the bed in the daybed. So anyway.
That is such a good imitation, Marjorie.
She does talk like that. Judy, hi. How are you? And everything's always fucking great with her. Anyway, before we get with Lauren, I want to tell you that you know, you are beloved in the comedy world. And
that means a lot to me.
It's true.
First of all, just that you would say that means a lot to me. And then you add the whole world. Thank you.
I had a spit curl because I was doing a show. Because I was doing a show in the, and it took place in the 20s, and I grew a little spit curl. And then I kind of liked it. And I it was on the side of my face. I literally, in the summertime, I would get tan, and then there'd be a little. And you came up to me one day at the improv, and you go, "You want to know why you have that stupid spit curl? Because if you had your own show in the 60s, you'd come sliding down a big spit curl singing, 'It's Judy Shaw!'" And it was... Because it was like my safety.
And then like, you would do it.
I would do
it
all the time.
You would stand on it and you would point.
Yeah.
If there was silence, you would go, "It's Judy."
Yeah, I know. I loved it.
By the way, probably the worst impression of me, only second to the one you did of your father.
Okay. Fair enough.
Marjorie, I guess.
What
according
about
to Howard,
the, yeah. What about nailed, the Israeli? The Israeli.
All I was thinking when you were doing that is, how can I write a part for Judy where she's in Israel?
Ah, okay. Because I love to talk in the Israeli.
Sure.
And they don't.
I love the therapist.
Because they don't.
Now do an Israeli right. Waitress.
Hello, welcome. What can, are you Arab? What can I get you, Hamas?
Now,
do you want ISIS with your water? Do you want ISIS with your water? Do you?
Now do an Israeli.
We have 6 million items on the menu. 6 million.
Would you do Israeli yes. babysitter?
Okay, Israeli babysitter. It would. What are you talking? Okay.
Slash cat.
Okay. Back to my beloved.
Mm-hmm.
When you were really the first one to go out to Hollywood, get a job, and I swear to God, everyone, not one person was like, "Oh, fuck that Michael Patrick King, he got a job writing on Murphy Brown." Everyone was like, "Yay! You were like the first." Because there were a lot of comics who were comics, but they weren't writers, even though they ended up being writers. But you were like, "I'm fucking going out there," and you got a job on a hit show, and everyone talked about it and was thrilled in New York.
Well, that's great. I actually loved my comedy friends. They were like, I didn't really have friends in high school.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
me too.
When I got to the comedy club, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, like the Marty Rackham. Oh, he's my straight friend that
right.
I never had. Oh, Judy's my tall.
My tall, obnoxious.
My tall Jew
the
friend.
Arthur.
My
yeah.
Jew friend that uh-huh. I never had. She's my dyke Jew friend that I was so sorely missing in my life.
Right.
But so I feel good about that. I feel good. You know, everyone needs one.
No, the best
collect
was,
all six.
You know, I get on stage and he would say, "You know what, Jew?" When you were born.
No, wait, I wrote you a joke.
I was born.
I'm going to do it. I am so tall. When I was born, my mother was pushing at St. Vincent's. The doctor was pulling at Mount Sinai. That's how tall I was as a child.
That was
that's great.
The fucking funniest.
But I loved everybody.
But
so,
you were also, you know, when you walk in and there's like Mr. Miserable, who's always, it's still the same thing. We're all mental comics, but there was always like, you know, David Tell, I wasn't funny, you know, everyone was such an individual mm-hmm. but we were all such outcasts that we all
yeah.
just got each other.
Yeah.
But you were like the bright light.
Oh,
like you
man.
Were
that is
like
so
you'd walk in and be like, you were the safety. You were the
oh my God.
You could always go to MPK
oh
and feel good.
That makes me touched.
Really?
Yeah. That's
it's
nice.
True.
It's nice. Because I was looking at people I liked.
Okay. So you get this job on mm-hmm. Murphy Brown.
Yeah.
And Everyone's like, oh my God.
This is the local train.
Right. And you get, shut the fuck up. We're going to get to the other ones. And you get Murphy Brown.
Right.
And you were just a staff writer?
Yeah. Here's the thing. My career started, I was a waiter till I was 37.
Right.
Wow. I didn't have my rent at 38.
Right.
And I started working in television in New York, and I went to Hollywood at 38. And I was called a story editor. It was an entry level.
Right.
And when I joined Murphy Brown, they were in their fifth year.
Right.
And they were really the shit. They
right.
were the best show on television. They were the mecca of the TV writing. And Diane English, who was the showrunner, was so brilliant. And it was Peter Tolan, me, Tom Palmer, Gary. And there was a bunch. There were five of us. Mm-hmm. And in my first year, I went to meet Diane English. And she said, you have to bring me five stories. And that was their fifth year. So they'd already done
right.
80.
Right.
So
How did you get the interview?
I wrote a script that was not a Murphy Brown. I was on one show that got canceled, the Ryan O'Neill Farrah Fawcett.
Oh, yeah.
I was on that show. I wrote a script on that show. It was about a sports network. And I wrote a script about the pro caddy, the professional lady golfer in a dysfunctional relationship with her caddy.
Right.
And it was a hilarious script. It never got filmed because the show got canceled. But because it was about golf, which is so random, one of the guys that I worked with on that show gave the script to Murphy Brown. The guy who read it was a golf freak.
Wow.
So he thought it was unique, and so he brought me in, and
boom.
I met Diane, and I brought five ideas in. And here's the interesting thing. She said, come in with five ideas. And I remember, you know, you have those moments in your life where suddenly, literally, you grab yourself and say, what are you doing?
Right.
Up. I was staying in L.A., and I went for my meeting with Diane, and she said, come in with five ideas in 2 days. And I went back to the place I was staying, and I laid down on the couch, and I thought, come in with five ideas. Yeah, I'll come out. Yeah, man. And all of a sudden, I literally grabbed myself by the shirt and said, get up. Start now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're not going to wing five ideas.
Right.
This is Murphy Brown. You're not going to just go in there and half-ass it.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with five really original ideas. I went in, pitched them. I wrote all those out.
Oh, my God.
No fucking way!
Every single script idea came up with, I wrote. My first five scripts were... We wrote 25 scripts that year. I wrote five.
You know what's amazing about...
And they weren't perfect, but they were originals.
If you had that opportunity... 5 years before, you wouldn't have been prepared.
No, I wouldn't have.
And that's what this business is
about. There was something about the crescendo of knowing.
Right. Yeah.
And also there was another writer that we knew named Mike Rowe.
Oh.
And Mike Rowe was already out in Hollywood. And I was on the phone talking to him, and I was like, I don't want to go to Hollywood. My whole life will change. And he said this sentence to me. No one takes a 40-year-old story editor seriously.
Mm.
And I was like, if that's true, I have 2 years to get going. And it woke me up a little bit.
How about a 53-year-old actor, comedian? Does anyone take that?
All bets are off for you because you defy age. You defy... You're your own thing.
Thanks.
You will be 63, 73. Mm-hmm.
But will I ever have...
A show?
A bathroom?
Another bathroom or ever have
apartment?
To not worry about money. Will I ever not have to worry about money? Go.
It's... Very hard to just say that now. Mm. I probably could have answered that better 5 years ago, not because of you, but because where the business is now. People used to get a series.
Oh, and get so much money.
First of all, that was 25 episodes.
Right.
Yeah.
And the money was through the roof.
Right.
Even guest stars were a fortune.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And now it's all boutique television.
Mm-hmm.
You get maybe 10 episodes.
Right.
On
Which is
Hulu.
Fine, but then I can get stuff.
You're going to work, Jim.
I know. I always work. So what show were you working on when you were out? Or
Murphy
were you
Brown. In... Mm. I came out of Murphy
Do
Brown.
Do you think
finally.
Because you went out there and no one knew you and it was like new start?
It's really an interesting question because the only thing that was left after I started making money, you know you have voices in your head?
No.
My first voice, my primary voice all those years was, I don't have any money. I don't have any
that's
money.
Mine, have that's mine. That's still my primary voice.
I don't have any
How
money.
How do I get rid of the primary voice?
Then I got money. So that
fuck.
Then that quieted, and then the only voice that was left is,
yeah,
you have to tell the truth. you have to tell the truth.
See, I've been telling the truth. That's why I have no money.
Okay.
Because I came out too early.
You did it the wrong way.
I talked about my kids in the mid-90s when, as a gay parent. I think it definitely...
It did not hurt you at all.
So why don't we put Lauren on so I can get over the guilt that Lauren keeps calling, but then I'm going on with my show.
All right.
Where? Lauren, we're in the middle of this whole thing, and it's like you're just interrupting again.
Well, yeah, I mean, I figured you guys probably miss me, and like...
No, Howard is great. He laughs at everything I say. He adds. Michael Patrick King, I've known him forever. He's like one of my heroes, and, you know, no one's interrupting me.
Oh, so you're good then.
Okay, don't make me feel guilty.
Lauren, it's nice. Lauren, it's nice of you to call in. This is Michael Patrick King.
Thank you so much.
I'm Irish and codependent, so I won't tell you what Judy's telling you. I'm happy you called.
Whatever, Howard.
Hi, Lauren. It's a little hard for me to hear. Is there any way to turn up the phone?
No, there isn't. See? Okay. It's always a problem. Always a problem.
Lauren, it's nice to talk
to
you.
I can hear you just fine, Judy.
What about Howard? Can you hear Howard?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Howard.
Aloha.
Oh,
aloha,
shut up.
How's it? I'm just smoking a joint on the
Okay, bye. Gotta go. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I have, a high-end show here. Work hard.
Don't worry. I'm on really nice property right now.
I don't care. It's everything. Every Facebook thing is you with a fucking joint. Hey, 420. 420. I have an audience that doesn't care about your pot smoking.
And I have an audience that does.
Right, but this is my audience, so you can
do
your pot smoking with your audience.
So
number one.
So what do I do?
You can split it up.
You know, I can spliff it up. Hey.
Okay, and even Michael's like, no, sorry. No. And you know what the other thing?
Michael,
I've told you never, ever. No, he. All right, we're hanging up. Bye.
She doesn't know I'm a
friend of yours.
Let me say something. I have insisted you are not high ever when you are working with me, correct?
No, but I'm on vacation right now.
Okay, bye. We love you. Have a happy vacation.
Hey, Howard.
Yes.
Don't take my job, huh?
Oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry. I'm just keeping the chair
I feel
warm.
Like you already got it.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, shut up. Yeah, because you're
pot
on the fucking
makes
beach.
You paranoid.
Yeah.
Hey,
no,
paranoid.
Don't worry, Lauren.
You're
pot
from four more times during the course of the show.
No, you're not. No. You're paranoid from the pot. Enjoy.
Okay, Michael Patrick King, listen.
Yes.
I'm not paranoid. I'm bold and comfortable. Big fan of yours. My wife is a big fan of your stuff.
Oh, thank you, Lauren.
Tell us about all the bitches you had before you were out of the closet.
Bye. Talk to you later.
She's
we
classy.
Already did it.
Love
okay,
you guys.
Enjoy.
We already
thanks for smoking. Okay, as Donald Trump said, you're fired. Bye-bye.
Again?
Yep, bye. Oh, my God. It's like having another child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to get the young kids listening.
It's a stepchild.
Yeah. All right.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So, Sex and the City.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea that this is going to be the zeitgeist for how many years? I mean, it really was.
Well, it ran 6 years from beginning to end.
Right.
But then it continued for another in syndication. It got even bigger in syndication.
But it really was.
It was a big deal.
Huge. Oh. It was.
Oh, it's just groundbreaking.
I mean, it defines that period of time. That period of time.
It
and it was the first time. Well, it was brilliant on many levels. First of all, it was the first show that actually used New York City as a character, not as a backdrop. New York City was one of the main characters, number one.
Yeah. We all lived here when we wrote it. Everything that we experienced here became storylines.
Right.
It was very specific
was
to
very
being
authentic.
In New York.
And, you know, I as in the Golden Girls, I do believe that those women could be gay guys. I, as I do, you know, it... it is a, it's sort of an attitude or a, I don't know. They're so specific.
I really have to say I take offense at that.
No,
I get it. But it marginalizes those ladies.
I didn't mean it like that. I can see. I didn't mean it in that marginal way. I just mean it in that sort of.
Here's the wound that once the show became really successful.
These are women. They are women, yes. And they're successful women, and they have. But and they are female. They are 100% female.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that. There's something that they're not victims. That's what I mean.
Interesting.
That the male part is like, we are like that. And women who live in New York are like that.
Yes.
And they do have gay best friends and they, men who understand
them.
All of
that is true.
And that's why I feel like so many, I didn't mean it that they were gay.
No, of course not.
I believe so many gay men appreciated them.
You hit it because when it started, people hadn't seen women.
Right.
Who were both.
Successful
and flawed.
Mm-hmm. And beautiful.
Unapologetic.
And independent.
Stylish.
Yes.
So immediately, since these were new types of female characters, people started saying, well, they're not women. They're gay men.
Well, no. I did not mean.
I know you didn't.
I know. But that's what people did say that. But their best friends were gay men. And that is the truth. Because a lot of straight men can't deal with women who are so independent and so educated, and yet the straight men on the show were also flawed.
Yeah.
And that it was, as you say, it was either the truth or kill myself.
Here's the thing. We didn't know it was going to be a zeitgeist. All I knew was that no one had ever said this before.
Mm-hmm.
It was completely fresh territory. The thing I'm most proud of is that we took sex and made it funny.
Right.
Yes. Up until then, sex and women was shame-covered.
No, right.
Yeah. It was black and
secret. Right.
And literally, Sex and the City, every time you see the word sex now, it's usually written in pink.
Right.
Because of what the fizz we put on
it.
The thing that was most exciting about it was, as I was single, gay, straight, doesn't matter. Anyone who feels like they are not in the mainstream of society, which at that time there was one voice that needed to be amplified that was very quiet,
right.
Which is that single people are not a leper.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a really strong reason for that show to be on the air, for people to claim themselves.
Because,
and to say,
yes.
Just if you don't have a husband, if you don't have children.
You're still a whole person.
You're still a whole person.
Right.
And there was a great villain in Sex and the City, and that was society.
Right.
It wasn't the guys.
No.
It was society.
They were flawed. They were
flawed.
Definitely flawed.
And the women were even more flawed,
right.
Which was great. And the idea of writing it was so exciting, and it started because it was Darren and I, and then gradually I started bringing in women. So by the end, I was writing it with six women.
Right.
And everything was influenced by our experience of being, you know, the pain and the humiliation of being not in a couple.
Right. You are one of the few, and when I say few, I mean can hold in my hand.
That's a big hand, so that's about 12 people.
Yeah, about a dozen, yeah.
Okay, and a basketball.
Well, if Krispy Kreme, they would give you an extra, right?
Baker's dozen. Of 12 people.
Of people with executive producers with a diverse writing staff. To this day, you do not see that. You were never ageist. You were never homophobic, racist, misogynistic. You really are what most EPs should strive to be, because you look at it as sort of a baby, as a... And who's going to take care of my baby the best?
Who has what you don't have?
Right.
Yeah.
I have this. Who has what you
but
don't
so
have?
But so many people are so insecure that they won't, because they, you know, and that's the basis of this fucking business is that, he's got something I don't have, or she's got something I don't have. I don't want, bye, I'm not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, actually, it's more, it makes you more dimensional and you more successful. And people don't fucking get that.
Yeah, you get to be in a room with people who can add rather than subtract.
Right.
But you have to be in a secure place in order to have those people surround you.
Right.
You know,
I mean, do you think it was because of your age and the fact that you were like, I do it now or I never do it?
No,
or?
I think it was because, first of all, I started with my very best friends were my three sisters.
Right.
So I never saw like a separation between women and men, even right. though I'm gay. I never thought like I'm still better than them.
Right. My father was the same. Second
I
of four sisters.
Yeah.
My father's the same.
Yeah.
Second born. Uh-huh. Three sisters.
But I'm the second born, two sisters.
Yeah.
And a brother.
So immediately.
Uses that like.
So that's why Judy thinks you're gay, because right. you like women.
I know, because
now,
I'm not threatened.
We would sleep together. He's like my best friend. I mean.
Yes, we did. We had a lot of fun sleeping together.
Yeah, we slept together. We'd sing Georgie Girl. I mean, he's like my brother.
I got him.
But the point is.
But you know what? There's gay men I've slept with that I haven't had sex with who are like my friends. So.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Anyway, so I like to hire as many people as I can who can make the thing better, because the whole, I get really excited about the thing, putting on a show in my yard.
Have you ever had to fire a good friend?
Yes.
And how did that go?
It made the new rule that I will, and I hate to say it, I can never, at a certain level, work with a very close friend who's also at another level, because at a certain level, people in your age group are already the boss.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're already working with somebody.
But what if
boss.
Someone who had started with you, you became friends working together and they become successful, but you weren't friends prior. So it's not like you hire, oh, you're my friend and you're funny, I'm going to give you a job. It was someone you hired, didn't know, became very close with. Would you continue to...
Yeah, I mean, all rules are meant to be broken.
Right.
The reality is, it's just very hard for people, me included, when it doesn't work out.
Right.
Because I love the people that I'm working with.
I mean, it's hard to be in this business
it's
and
hard
have
to be
a heart.
The boss. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be the boss, number one. There's a phrase, everybody hates the boss.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Everybody hates the boss.
You.
Oh my God!
What
you ran out?
I just decided
I heard
which
this.
One.
Howard, not a good sign in the middle of an interview.
No, because I was like, oh, do I want to go here or here? But you identify.
Yeah.
You have been said that you identify with Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
The most, and you feel that most writers identify with Carrie because she is the writer.
She's the writer.
So you are.
She's the individual too.
Was Sarah Jessica Parker already cast when you wrote the first season?
Yes.
Okay.
The whole series was made because Sarah Jessica Parker said yes.
And all of the, were the other?
The other girls were cast, yes.
But oh, wow.
The series was built around the star power of Sarah Jessica. It was before any movie star had gone to cable, really.
You know what's amazing is that I've auditioned for Divorce, the show she's on now.
Yeah.
Twice. And I really think I nailed it.
Let me tell you something. When you audition for something twice, that's a really good sign. It means they really want to use you, but the part isn't right yet.
I was a therapist. I should have done an Israeli. Oh, no, I was a mediator. I should have done the Israeli accent. Listen, you've both decided that you're going to work things out, so take a look. All right, anyway.
Yeah, you'll be on it.
I hope
so. You were on Sex and the City. You were on Two Broke Girls. I mean, what more do you need?
I love you.
you were in the Barnes & Noble.
You said that writing. Yeah, that's right.
That
Judy Toll wrote that.
Yes.
Mm. My lover.
I love Judy
Toll.
Yeah.
Loved her. Mm.
That's another person.
That is.
You know, Judy Toll was a really good friend of ours who died. Yeah.
No, I know Judy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She died, and I mean.
And iTunes has her.
Yes. I told you I'd
start. Shareaholic.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I miss her every single day.
She's spectacular. She was going through chemo in the and she would wear people
that wig, and she'd be like,
wigs.
"Top of the morning to you."
She gets wigs, and she'd get a really long, glamorous, obviously starlitty booby wig.
Right.
And she'd put it on, and Judy and I, when she was sick, she'd come in, and we'd play we'd play straight executive producer and PA. Hey, give me some coffee. Get on my car. She'd sit on my lap. Should I detail your car?
Did you know that when she had cancer, she would call up and say, Judy Toll to stage four. Judy Toll to stage four, please.
Oh.
You said that writing, you said it about Carrie, but I think it's something that says a lot about you, is that writing is the idea of trying to make life something that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like things that happen in your life making
sense. it's a way of framing something.
Right.
And to this day, when something bad happens, I think, yeah, oh, it would be so hard if I wasn't a writer.
Right.
Because I can, yeah, store it away and somehow alchemize it into something else. Right. I can make it into something wonderful.
Or right,
it's a feeling that I don't want to feel that maybe someday a character will feel.
Right.
And with Sex and the City, it was the great thing about writing Carrie was, aside from writing the flawed individual,
yeah,
you got to write the column.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right, right. You,
right.
The sort of writer part. So that,
right,
was,
yeah. You have had to defend Two Broke Girls,
yeah,
on many occasions. Mm-hmm. It's a sitcom. It's on the CBS network.
Yes, it is.
It has very strong characters, mm-hmm, real characters, mm-hmm, with accents, mm-hmm, with prejudices, mm-hmm, and the characters say to each other things people would say to each other in a restaurant setting, or even in any kind of setting where people are really close or are forced to work together.
And they have a writing staff.
And they have, mm-hmm, a writing staff. And, you know, there is so much shit on television.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much shit, mm-hmm, that gets made, and so much great stuff that doesn't get made.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have a hit show that people are watching, that is, mm-hmm, a hit on a network, which is not easy these days.
Impossible.
Yeah.
And you have to defend the stereotype 1, stereotype 2, and stereotype 3. When you look at other shows that are obviously meant to be offensive, like that are, and this is meant to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, how do you deal with these people who are so judgmental? And, you know, it's like you have a hit. Where does that fucking come from? Where does that come from that you have to defend artistry? I mean, you might not like the show. Fine, don't watch the fucking, mm-hmm, show. But it's not, it's like, look at you. You're a gay guy. You know, you're, it's not like you're fucking Donald Trump executive producing a show. It's a hit. You know who the audience is.
Look, here's the thing.
It's, I don't.
And they're watching.
And right before I did, in between Sex and the City and Two Broke, I did a show called The Comeback with Lisa.
Yes, mm-hmm, I have it down here.
But the point is,
and it came back.
Go ahead. It came back 10 years later because, right, it was ahead of its time.
Right, and it was called The Comeback.
The Comeback.
Because it knew it was coming back.
People look at the first episode.
Oh, that's it.
And they go, they assume the worst. They never think somebody's on track and they're going to develop and, mm-hmm, have an arc and grow.
Yeah.
And then you see it later. You're like, oh,
it
had a method
sense
to it. When Two Broke Girls came on, and I'm not really defending it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When Two Broke Girls came on, it was 5 years ago. And the very first thing that happens in the pilot is the amazing Kat Denning says in the very first line,
Jewish,
when a waiter is snapping his fingers at her,
mm-hmm,
Miss, dude, she says, you think is the sound that gets you service. I think is the sound that dries up my vagina.
I love that.
First 20 seconds, that was our hello. And a lot of people were like, no, now let me remind you, this is before Girls, before Broad City, before Train Run.
Got it.
People, mm-hmm, weren't saying, is the sound that dries up my vagina yet.
I was.
But I said cunt. Go.
Yeah. But the idea is, anything new is always...
It's like that commercial with the new ideas, baby, that's everyone is throwing away. Mm-hmm. You know that, mm-hmm, white thing?
You have a... Yeah. When you
know what I'm talking about? The monster... Who's in the fucking IBM commercial where, yeah, the monster's in the thing and it's really ugly and people are throwing shit at it,
yeah,
and then finally the IBM opens the door and he walks in and he's like, you know, beautiful.
Yeah, look. The
so that's
the
what I'm hoping about my career.
You have to, because you are the white monster. here's the reality: is you always have to defend your stuff, and, mm-hmm, if you care,
it's like there's no disclaimer. Like I love Lisa Lampanelli. She's a great person. But I always felt like, I'm just saying this as an example, and it's not only her, but she often said, these are just words. I don't, you know, I'm not being offensive. I have, mm-hmm, you know, I date black men. I do. But I would rather she didn't say that. Just be who you are. And you don't have to disclaim.
Look, Two Broke Girls was written as a melting pot show. I wanted to come back to the live audience because I saw too much abstract sort of single camera comedy that I didn't think there was anything in it for the audience at home. It felt like writers were having a good time writing stuff and maybe actors were having a good time, but they weren't jokes. And I had done a beautiful single camera show. I had done Sex in the City. Which,
and you want to do a traditional sitcom.
Because I had done Murphy Brown. Yeah. And I remember the excitement of an audience. And I thought, if I'm coming back, I want to do a hard-hitting, joke-driven show. Now, as I was a stand-up, I know what a joke is.
Right, yes. I know.
So it all comes back. You hit a joke in front of an audience. And I thought, what's missing from television? I didn't see any, I wanted to go with a young group, demographic. I didn't see any young, hardworking girls on television. I had this idea. I got Whitney Cummings to write it with me because I wanted a girl in her 20s. Whitney was a stand-up.
Right.
We wrote a really hard-hitting show.
Right.
But we wanted it to reflect a New York diner like the West Way or like some
Right.
So the melting pot cast, you have Garrett Morris who played
And is he the fucking nicest guy?
76-year-old African-American.
Who invited me to a show. I gotta go on.
Who's an Asian-American playing a Korean-American.
Right.
Then you had a Russian in the way that people used to have, you know, Andy Kaufman used to do an accent. But they were diverse and wild points of view.
But no one, everyone is so, it's like we've gone backwards. It's like, honestly.
Except that we say a lot
more.
And we get away with a lot. And I call it high lowbrow.
Like, right.
Your kid can watch it. Yeah. Your 7-year-old kid can watch it and think it's colors.
Right.
You, if you understand words, get, well, that's a really, really... very dirty, clever joke.
Right.
So it's like cartoons if you're a kid, and if you're an adult, you can enjoy it. And if you're 70, which is a lot of CBS, you get titillated by it.
Right.
But there's an arbitrator in the middle.
Well, I'm almost 70. Can I get a fucking show on CBS? All right.
There's a whole layer that comes between you and the audience, which is the people that say, we don't like multi-cameras.
Right.
Yeah. They're out.
Right.
We don't want women to say vagina.
Right.
We don't want any racial jokes. Have you looked at the world now?
Right.
This is the time to talk about things.
All right. So.
All right.
So now you have this hit show.
Yeah.
Will you produce more stuff?
Yeah.
If you had a friend that you've known for like 30 years who has written.
And they're still in the business?
Yeah. And they've written two pilots that are excellent. Would you even have the time to give notes or for that person? Or is that like, I'm not working with friends?
I am so offended.
Okay. So.
That you would bring Howard and I here just for this moment? If I had wanted to read.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Judy, I will read anything you write.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you really want my opinion, because
A
lot of people just want to be on the air. They don't want an opinion.
No, I want an opinion so that I can get on the air.
Yeah.
And get the right showrunner. Okay, listen.
Yeah.
First of all, I love you. We always ask and I know the answer to this question, but we ask everyone what antidepressants they're on. I know you have probably never taken an antidepressant.
I have never taken an antidepressant.
You've never had a drink.
I've never had a drink.
Have you ever smoked pot?
No.
Have you smoked a cigarette?
Yes, for a play.
Do you think you're really healthy?
I am very healthy, but I have to work hard at it.
Really?
I don't drink because I'm afraid I'll be a drunk.
Was your father... Now, you don't mention your father a lot. Did you have...
I'm talking about my father. My father was amazing, and he had a massive drinking problem.
Okay. Mm. A lot of people... You know, a lot of people of our generation, like women, especially in... Like, we grew up middle class, upper middle class. Mm-hmm. And you would see... I mean, I remember a family, the parents went out to dinner, dead. Both fathers died in a car accident. Obviously, they were drinking, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of, if the women were housewives or something, you know, here you have an intelligent person who's like delegated to being a housewife or, you know, they have martinis, they smoke, they, you know, it's really...
Oh, it's different.
It's amazing. Yeah. It was different.
Well, that
then.
Was the thing to do then.
It was very dangerous.
Yeah. Right.
My father eventually stopped drinking.
Right.
And he saw my success.
Right.
He loved Sex in the City.
He's, right.
Wow. And we ended so well.
See, that's all that matters.
We ended so well.
Yeah.
And I think a lot, you know, when a parent and a child don't connect, I think the grown-up attitude is, what percentage of it are you not bringing?
Yeah.
So.
I have to say, I my father was a shock. He died swimming. I was 27. Mm-hmm. I wish I knew him now.
And he was in good shape, too.
Yeah, he was in very good shape.
Interestingly
but,
enough, you know, like, when did you come out? Why did you come out? My push to come out was I believed that it was my duty, destiny, life journey to make sure I told my father I was gay. Mm-hmm. And I did. It was my life journey to make sure I told my parents I was gay, especially my father. I used to think...
Well, I'm so glad I lied to my father on the phone.
If he dies before I tell him, I felt like that would be, if that's weird, a spiritual failure. I don't know if you can...
I feel like my father knew. And he was just saying...
Of course he called you and said it.
I mean...
Yeah. He suggested you might have a girlfriend.
And then 1 year, Sharon... couldn't make Thanksgiving or something, and he said, it's not going to be the same without you. He was such a nice guy.
And when I told my father, he just looked at me with, like, his eyes were very blue, and it was just this beautiful look, like, now everything makes sense. This is what I knew all along.
Right.
And he smiled.
Thank you. Thank you.
And he was filled with love.
And I don't think I had any unresolved with my mother.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
No.
No, I think your mother saw your resolve on stage every time.
Yeah, that's true.
Judith, are you dead? What happened, Judith?
I have some...
And she was so proud of you.
First of all,
so proud of you.
Carolyn Strauss and I still talk about you with the tape recorder. That was Carolyn Strauss's favorite bit. Judith.
Oh, I have so many more.
But that was classic.
No, there is another one I was doing last year about... because she was in the nursing home and she hated the food, and I swear to God, I probably have it on
my
thing.
She's still in your act?
Yeah, I haven't.
How amazing is that?
Mm.
I did 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother, the show that was off Broadway here.
I believe
in
I
Toronto.
It.
And it. I was so worried. It was right after she passed away. I felt like we were on stage together. You know, it's like I feel like she's with me. I talk to her sister a lot, and, you know, I feel... And people wrote to me like, oh, my God, I'm going to miss your... Like, she was sort of a comedian, you know, and...
You created a comic character of your mother.
She
was
loved
like your
it.
Co-star for a lot of those sets.
I know. Oh. Yeah. Before we get to what really pisses you off...
Okay.
Because I want to know what really pisses you off. You... have a quote that I love. You say, in life, you have to follow the green lights.
That is my big thought. When I was an actor and I would come off stage and I was okay, but I would look at people and I always wanted them to like be lit up.
Right.
And say, you were great. And there was always a kind of a thought or a question like in their eyes, like it didn't quite do something that I wanted it to. And when I started doing improv or comedy and I came off stage, it was complete affirmation and joy.
Mm.
And that's when I started realizing you have to go where that face is looking at you. And that was like a green light. That was like, go where the green lights are. And in any career, but especially in an artistic career, there's a lot of red lights and there's a lot of yellow.
I get the light all the time.
There's a lot of yellow lights. But my sort of philosophy in life is look for the green lights. And by that I mean look where people are encouraging you to go. Mm-hmm. And be around people that you feel the best around and the funniest around or the most... strong around.
You know,
and try to avoid the yellow lights. It's really simple.
I know.
And when there's a red light, as hard as it is, get the signal.
Right.
It's a red light repeatedly. Not one time.
Right.
Every time I try to get them to see me this way.
They don't. So stop.
Look around.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the green lights?
And
go in that direction.
You know, I...
That's great.
I know.
That is just great.
And I... For me, I've done many iterations of my career. I did stand up. I was on a sitcom, and then Henry was born, and then I wrote and produced for Rosie, and then I did these off-Broadway shows, and I toured, and more TV and specials. And recently, I guess about a year and a half ago, I went back to the Cellar because I used to always work at the Cellar, and I avoided it because I was pregnant, 6 months pregnant, and someone was smoking. It was when you could still smoke. Mm-hmm. And I said, can you please stop smoke in the front row? And they took a hit of the cigarette and blew it in my face.
Right.
And no one did anything. This is before the Cellar was hottie hot, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck the clubs, fuck the, you know. And I went to do theaters and, you know, I do stand up at Caroline's or Gotham.
Sure, the classy places.
And I went to do the Montreal Comedy Festival last year, in 2014, and I was talking to Lynn Coplitz, and I was like, oh, I really miss the Cellar. I miss it. You know, I hadn't been there since like 2004, you know. And she's like, go back, go back. And I wrote to Esty and Noam. I said, I want to come home.
No.
And I am there for like three, four. I mean, I am back.
You're kidding.
Three, four nights a week. I go down. Yeah. I do sets. Like, remember everyone used to make fun of me?
Yeah.
I still do that. And it's like I'm the oldest person there, but that's what I'm meant to do. It's like I was doing these other things and I was really successful, but so now I want a fucking special like everyone else has a special.
Well,
but
you will.
Yeah, but I have been, and you know, I've been aged out of a lot of certain things, Comedy Central and stuff like that, which is fine. But I'm fucking funny, and it doesn't matter. You know, it's Henry says to me, can you do my brother's in his fucking frat, love your podcast, can you do a set at the frat? I'm like, I'm not doing a set at the fucking frat. But
that's
these 20-year-old guys are like, you're so fucking funny. And I love that my demographics are, that is where I'm meant
to be. But that's also because you have such a young mindset, too. You're so playful.
Oh, I'm such a baby. I am the 5-year-old. That's when I didn't take antidepressants. Mm-hmm. What pisses you off the most?
I think the thing that pisses me off the most is that I care what other people think. I
really
hate that about myself.
It's the
final frontier for me. It's a trick because you have to listen to the reaction to your work. But I don't like the fact that I go even further and it bothers me what people think. That pisses me off. Mm. Like, I think you should be further along than that now. You got to get involved.
It's still.
A little bit.
But I got to tell you, when I get on stage and there's one fucking Fabicina, miserable punim, and the whole audience is like, I love you. All I think about is that fucking miserable cunt sitting in the front who probably, you know.
You can go wide with that. Mm-hmm. You could have.
You know, I have to approach. What happened? I say, what happened today? No. That you have to sit there at my show. Seriously, I want to know why you're so fabulous. I do. I ask them.
It happens everywhere. Your movie can open and you can have the giant blockbuster weekend and you're thinking about the verbissa face of the critic who said that it's garbage.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Do you read reviews?
I don't now because I assume. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they get sent to me, I assume, maybe you can glance.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I have to look at ratings for part of my life.
Yeah.
I don't like waking up and having to look at ratings, even though it's all changing and none of it means anything right now.
Right.
But, you know, you still.
I don't either, unless someone says, read this, it'll be helpful.
Yeah.
Because if you read a review, especially I've been in a few musicals and other shows, you'll think every time you get to a certain part that they mention, you'll fucking think about that comment they made about, you know.
Yeah, that's it ruins it. And the other thing is now everything is a review now.
I know.
I mean,
and everyone's a reviewer.
Everybody's a critic. And you go to the conference and you're equal weight with a blogger who has five people in the New York Times.
Right.
And it's weird. And also the comments below.
Right.
I think the two scariest words in the English language now are read comments.
Right.
Because
if you do.
And it's psychos have a platform. Well, people have a platform
absolutely.
That should.
And you can talk yourself in and out of the idea. Well, they're sitting at home on the couch I'm actually doing it. But it still gets in your head.
Right. And stays there. Do you ever get pissed off, like, because you live in L.A., you're in fucking traffic. Like, do you ever
I got pissed off in New York yesterday.
Why?
Because I came back. I live here. I have a place here. I came back. I was going to throw a beautiful Christmas party.
You did.
You were there. I threw a beautiful, gorgeous,
unbelievable,
festive Christmas party. And everything for a month was trying to be taken care of. And the day of the party, the city opens the street.
Oh, yeah.
In front of the apartment. And the jackhammering is so... And I thought to myself, you can dress it up all you want, but New York City is a real bitch sometimes.
Oh.
She's just going to do what she wants.
Oh, I know.
I couldn't... And the only person anyone could hear at the party was Judy. She's the only one who could ice out the jackhammer.
But that was fucking funny.
Eventually they went away. But it's a rough city. I don't get
It's true. Yeah. You can't.
I don't get bugged. Mm. I don't get bugged by traffic in L.A. I don't have to move in rush hour. I go for work very early and come home in weird hours. So
no. I can't take the fucking. I think it was better not knowing when the subway was going to come. Now they have these signs up: 12 minutes, 4 minutes. I don't want to know because you're not. When it says 12 minutes, I want to fuck it. Like it was never 12 minutes till De Blasio got here. It wasn't ever 12 minutes.
Why do you need to know 12 minutes when you're hoping maybe it's 2?
Right.
Right.
So and
that's
so
10
you're like,
minutes
oh,
of pain.
Right.
Right.
Well, look at. I got in the elevator. I couldn't get into this building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They don't tell you how to get in the elevator.
I know.
I got in 3 elevators. I went up to 35 and came down.
Right.
And I just looked at these two girls like, I don't have a clue.
Right.
No, there's no instructions.
Because you got to fucking press the thing.
Yeah. Right.
And then it tells you what elevator. What happened?
I don't know. And then I get off on this floor and it says call people and I press O and a woman says CBS and I said, hi, I'm here to do the Judy Gold podcast. She goes, where are you? I go, I'm on 44. She goes, our building doesn't go up that high. I'm in Soho.
Are you kidding?
Why are you answering the phone in the Time Life building?
I know. We got to get a receptionist here, Patrick. There was one. What the fuck happened?
Layoff.
I couldn't get in either. I had the same problem.
All right with this fucking...
No, but it was fine. We got in.
All right. I don't know what to say. This has been like
how
one of my favorite
this?
Shows.
Yeah. Really? Because I have no clue. I feel like I'm just talking to you.
Howard's
Howard.
A listener.
Well, I'm a listener.
How would you rate this?
Because I'm a part of it.
We don't
and
listen
I really
to reviews, Judy. Look away.
This was just my favorite podcast.
Because you're on it?
Because I'm listening. Because I'm sitting here and watching the interaction between the two of you. And it's just so spontaneous and so real.
You know what else is great about this podcast?
What?
No video assist.
Oh, mm-hmm. I'm just so... Because I just want to talk.
You look so pretty today, Judy. You look so gorgeous.
I look so fucking awful.
I'm sorry that no one could see us.
Yeah,
we're going to take a picture that we're...
You do look beautiful.
Yeah, we'll take a picture.
Remember your pretty press conference?
Yeah, I used to have a pretty press... Was that in college?
No, that was when you were doing when you were at the Comedy Store.
Oh yeah, it was. And I would have everyone ask me questions about what it's like to be pretty.
Well, it was.
I forgot about that.
The Pretty Press Conference.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was really fun for me.
Oh my god, I love this because I get to talk. You know, like comics and I don't know, talking to people about who they really are. You know.
Yeah,
I don't care about, like, people go on so many shows mm-hmm. to promote shit, and I really want to know what makes the person tick, you know?
And you're so nice and so genuine.
Oh,
and just,
God, Howard.
No, I mean, it's
get Lauren on the phone.
No,
because I didn't know you before. I just met you today.
Yeah.
So.
And I didn't know you before.
I know.
And you both have been major influences
we
in
have,
my life.
Yes. We have both done... A good job.
That's amazing.
Of backing you up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And letting you shine.
Absolutely.
And having my back.
Having your back.
And loving you for who you are.
Oh,
and
God.
Is this the point where you say that Howard's the father of your babies?
No. 6'4". He's 6'4".
Mm. All right.
He's so, not, sorry. No, that Howard's not the
didn't
father.
Didn't quite work.
All right. No red hair either. Only
well,
he has
Judy,
older.
I wish you... a happy new year.
I wish you a happy, healthy, best to Craig.
Thank you.
Howard.
Yeah.
Wish you happy, healthy, even
Shana
though it's
tova.
Not really the real new year for us.
Well, right. But it isn't. But I want you to do me a Christmas gift.
Yes.
I really want you to give me, when you're going to end the podcast.
Which is now.
I want you to give me a really classic It's Judy show.
Okay.
And indicate the spit curl that is no longer there.
Okay. First of all. Thank you for listening to Kill Me Now, everyone. It's Judy Shaw! Yeah!
So long.
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.